You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Heard about Anchor. It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
And just like that, folks, I'm back. I took a week off, but this is episode 78 of YWC Football Talk. The Trust Fund is back once again. Jared is back on the show. Big Rat will be by shortly. But, Jared, since I talked to you, a lot has transpired in the NFL, so how are we feeling about everything?
Crazy free agency period, right? I mean, obviously, we kind of saw a lot of this coming. Mass cuts across the league with the cap going down in a year where it was expected to go up. And yeah, a lot of teams making moves.
Exactly. But here's the one thing though, like since obviously we last spoke, the cap's going to be going up in the next few years because the owners got together and said, hey guys, we're going to sign a brand new TV contract worth $110 billion. And as a man that loves his money, I know you love to see that.
See a lot of these players this year that were taking short-term deals with the idea that they were going to take advantage of that in the next couple of years. So they're kind of betting on themselves. Some of these guys are coming off of injuries. So 2021 is kind of being treated as a prove-it year for a lot of guys.
Yeah, exactly. So when the salary cap bounces back in 2022 and 2023, a lot of those guys can cash in and get those like big contracts that they want.
Exactly. It's like most guys you saw kind of getting signed in the mid-teens relatively quickly, but you only saw a handful like pushing above $15 million. You know, even guys like Juju would obviously be an example of a hometown discount, but still the fact that you know he's playing for under $10 million, dude like that in an average year could easily command more than that.
Exactly, and speaking of all the money and stuff, there was one guy though who said "F the hometown discount," and that is Kenny Golladay signing a deal, I believe, at $18 million per year with the New York Giants. I obviously know you like it just because you like the player, but do you like it from a financial perspective as well?
I like it. Obviously, it's a lot of guaranteed money, but I really think that the Giants are in a situation where they kind of have to win now for the sake of their quarterback and their general manager. So, in the case of him, I think that, they probably were competing against themselves at the end of the day. Teams like the Ravens inquired only briefly and were scared off by the price tag. And I just think that Golladay had a lot of leverage just based on the fact that, like, Allen Robinson ended up getting tagged, Chris Godwin ended up getting tagged, or rather re-signed. It was a year where, you know, it was obviously still deep wide receiver-wise and free agency, but I think he was by far the top choice. And they really have lacked that number one receiver ever since Odell left. They need that downfield reliable threat. They need that guy to win contested catches. They need that go-to, big body guy, because the team is just pretty, they're made up of so many, smaller bodied, speedy slot-type receivers. Which is why, when I heard, Curtis Samuel's name being tossed around, I thought, oh, no, not him. I don't think he solved the problem whatsoever. So I think, maybe Golladay was a bit of a reach financial-wise, but I just think that it's worth the gamble. I'd rather take the risk of him being on the team and living up to the money than not being there at all, especially considering where they're picking in the draft. I mean, the only other guy that I would have been happy as a substitute for someone like that is Jamar Chase, and he's not going to fall that low. So I think you go with the closest thing to a sure thing you have. You saw what Stephon Diggs did for Josh Allen last year, so they're trying to make the same thing happen with Daniel. Again, they're probably playing for his future, along with, from Dave Gettleman's perspective, he's probably, working for his job as well. So I like the move.
And just like that, we have Big Rat 310 entering the podcast. We just started recording a little bit. Jared was just giving his quick thoughts on the Jared Goff situation. Obviously, Big Rat hasn't been here since free agency, but how are we doing today, Big Rat?
So far, so good. Just long, stressful day. But here to have some fun.
It's all good. And one point that Jared said was the New York Giants went out to get Kenny Golladay as a weapon to them. But speaking of which, because he's in his third year, a team across the street from the Giants decided to trade their quarterback today, as Sam Darnold is now a Carolina Panther. And unfortunately for Big Rat and I, out of the AFC East.
Yeah, Brian Flores and Bill Belichick in particular just seem to absolutely love playing Sam Darnold. Like, they made his life a living hell two straight years.
Yeah.
Sure, they make any quarterback's life a living hell if they're playing under Adam Gase and behind that offensive line minus Mekhi Becton. I don't think Darnold was the problem with the Jets. No, he didn't have a particularly good run with them, but he was pretty much put in no position to succeed. They didn't have good weapons, average at best. They didn't have a good line. They didn't have a serviceable running game, really. Just none of the things that would be conducive to a young quarterback success. I don't think they were able to really unlock the playbook with him, get him rolling out of the pocket. I just think it was kind of a no-win situation. I'm glad for his sake he got out of it before he got too old and, less valuable.
But man, Sam, also here's the fun thing with Sam Darnold too. He ends up fucking over Teddy Bridgewater, not once in his career, but twice. That's the big thing now, because the Panthers are still due to owe Teddy, so I'm just trying to figure out, where in the hell he could end up. But I feel like it's going to be the same thing for him again, where he gets traded, late August.
They could trade him to Chicago. The problem with keeping him, which Jared, I think me and him, I looked at this, is because, as of now, Teddy Bridgewater's a better quarterback than Sam Darnold. Even Sam Darnold's year with the Jets, remember, Teddy was on that team too, and Teddy was not playing him in the preseason. And obviously at the time, Darnold was the third overall pick. He was a rookie. He was the future. So Darnold was going to get no matter what. That's why they had to trade Teddy. Teddy was better than him back then. He's been better than him since then too. They can't keep him because of the fact that I think it would hurt their ability to let Darnold get the job. Now, the problem is, what makes this kind of awkward is what I haven't seen talked about in this trade. Teddy makes a lot of money. Teddy, post June 1st, has a $15 million salary cap hit. So, Teddy makes a lot of money this year. They can't just out-cut him. If they do, Teddy's going to be making a lot of money. So, the only thing they can do is trade him. According to Ben Shapiro, teams that are interested in him don't want to pay him at that salary. So you're in this awkward situation where the Panthers are going to ask Teddy, hey, take less money, or else take less money so they trade you. And Teddy might be, you know what, screw that. I don't want to take less money. He never got – this was his only big payday in his career. He might want to hold on to that $15 million. And if he refuses to take the pay cut, it's hard to trade him. Panthers to cut him, and if they cut him and they paid all his guarantees, then he can sign with any team in the league and he can get what he wants, another chance to start. But if the Panthers don't cut him and don't, it can make it awkward to transition to Sam Darnold. So I think the Panthers are in a tough spot here. I don't think people think it's just so easy to trade him. I mean, it's a $15 million salary that's guaranteed. It's not easy.
Exactly. You have the two tough situations now with, obviously, because I want to get into this with you, the whole San Francisco debacle, which Chris Greer just woke up feeling dangerous that day. you guys, like, or you, like, Chris Greer's in the driver's seat now with that trade, but, like, how now the Niners trade away their first-round picks for next year and the year after to get the third overall pick, but then now they're apparently they're turning around and saying, hey, we want a first for Jimmy Garoppolo, and it's like, John Lynch, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, I think that Bridgewater, it's an awkward spot because, you know, you look at the list of teams that would be viable trade partners is really narrowed significantly. I mean, you could have said maybe the Patriots if they didn't re-sign Cam Newton, but even still, you know, for them to inherit that salary after all the money they just dropped in free agency, I don't see that happening. And you got Cam there already. They're probably going to, if they get another quarterback, it would probably be, you know, a rookie, which is allegedly what they want to do, trying to move up into the top 10. And I don't know, and the Bears could have been one, but again, you got Andy Dalton already, so it makes no sense. I think, you know, he kind of sucked. I mean, it sucks for him, too, because, well, I think Teddy is, you know, kind of a little overhyped in some ways. I do think that if he had been on that Saints team right now, you know, you look at the money they threw at Taysom Hill, and he proved that, you know, he was good in that offense a year prior. I think if he was in that situation this year, they would have had no problem committing to him as a starter for 2021.
And Griff, on your San Francisco point, yeah, there. I agree. I always want to go with Jared, San Francisco thing. So the San Francisco point first. Yeah, the they're in trouble with a first round. I don't think they're going to get that. They're definitely not going to get that.
No.
And Tim Kawakami, who covers the Niners for the Athletic, also said that they can trade him, someone can get him. But whoever trades for Jimmy is not going to pay him $25 million either. Whoever trades for him is going to want him at a deficit. So, especially now, we know everything we've talked about. It's like reduced salary cap this year. You know, not a lot of cap space for a lot of teams. A lot of teams just spent their money on free agents, and they have to spend money on different classes. No one really wants to pay that contract right now. So, but I think for San Francisco, though, I think they are comfortable just doing the Alex Smith most. I really believe, and that's why they're going to ask for a first round pick. It's like, you know, there's a benefit to keeping Jimmy G. We can keep him, play him. You know, maybe the rookie's not ready. Especially if they take someone like Trey Lance. Trey Lance is a raw prospect. Trey Lance is going to be fine. So I think that totally comfortable just doing that. And that, but it's the kind of situation. Okay, but we'll give this back to him. Fine. But I don't think they're actively trying to move around. Not what Patriots fans want to hear. I know all the Patriots are saying differently. But I think they're totally comfortable. They're going to have leverage here. Like, they can tell Patriots, you know what, we'll just do it another year. Like, that's fine by us. Like, they can have that comfort level in place. And so that's the San Francisco situation. Teddy situation, I mean, me and Jared will talk about it, but, like, it's not fair. Like, I hate the Adam Gase argument so much. I think it's intellectually disingenuous because me and Danny said this on Twitter. Ryan Tannehill was never as bad as Darnold under Gase. Never. It's just a fucking lie. Like, Tannehill was, like, a really good quarterback in 2016. His first year in Gase. Then he was injured for all of 2017, and then he was bad in 2018. But he was not Darnold-level bad. He was just, like, a little bit below average, not the worst quarterback in the league. So, he's arguing so disingenuous to imply that Tannehill was that bad in Gase, and now Darnold, you're in New York.
I mean, I kind of see that argument, but I mean, and the Dolphins, you know, they had offensive line issues throughout Tannehill's run with the team, but they still, you know, from a weapons perspective, I mean, even with the you know, subpar O-line play, Jay Ajayi still had a stud year that year, and, you know, you still had Landry, Kenny Stills. I'd argue that's a much better supporting cast than Darnold ever been supplied with.
Robbie Anderson, who Darnold played with the first 2 years of Darnold's career, Robbie Anderson accomplished more in his career than Kenny Stills ever has. Robbie Anderson was a 1,000-yard receiver last year. And he's the same type of skill set, same type of player. So, no, I don't fully buy that. I think Robbie Anderson and Jamison Crowder is not. It's Jarvis Landry is better than both of them. Yes. Jarvis Landry.
Yeah.
Tannehill did not have Landry his last year. Tannehill had Devontae Parker, who didn't play for half the year, and Kenny Stills. And Albert Wilson, who got hurt early in the season. He did not have Jarvis Landry in 2018. So, no, Jamison Crowder and Robbie Anderson in 2019 under Gase is better than what Tannehill dealt with his last year under Gase. And I'm glad you brought up the O-line, because notoriously, Miami had the worst O-lines in the league, like his entire career down here. But look at the Mahomes, my Twitter account. Look at the numbers. It's not like they're close. It was not close. No. Tannehill was a middle-of-the-road quarterback. Dalton was the worst quarterback in football. It's like the 17th best quarterback in the league versus the 34th best quarterback in the league. Like, that's how big the difference was. It was not like they were neck and neck. Tannehill was better, but he had more help. No, Tannehill was so much better. And so, those arguments are a little disingenuous. And what I was telling Dan, and what I told Jeremy Messenger, I do think Darnold can get better in Carolina. The thing is, though, I think he has to be, like, an actual good quarterback. If Darnold improves to, like, average, I don't think that's a success. I don't think giving a second-round pick and a fourth-round pick for some average quarterback pick worth it, because you can get that in free agency. You can get that with Teddy. You can get that anywhere. I think it's only comes worth it if he's good. He has to be good. So his arguments that he's going to get better, I agree he's going to get better. That's not the point. It's not good enough to improve the worst quarterback to average. He's got to be a good quarterback, and that's what's going to determine the success of his career.
Like I said, I still think, you know, it's going to be an upgrade supporting cast-wise. I mean, you make your point about the receivers not really being a massive difference, but I think the running game was certainly like night and day. I mean, you're dealing with, like, you know, a 50-year-old Frank Gore as the lead back over there, and now he's going to the Panthers who have Christian McCaffrey. If he comes back for a full season healthy, obviously that's going to, you know, do wonders for his, you know, flexibility for what he can do. And also, if they hang on to the number 8 pick, they're going to be in position to take, you know, one of the big four, whether it's a Pitts or a Chase or a Devonta or a Waddle. Although I think that they're probably a trade-down contender at this point, having made the Darnold move. But if they stay pat in that spot, they're going to be able to replace and possibly upgrade from Curtis Samuel. So they're going to, I mean, I think that it's definitely a better situation. It's a better coaching situation as well. You know, I mean, obviously, Robert Saleh is an upgrade over Adam Gase, but it's another defensive-minded coach. And I think working with Joe Brady and Matt Rhule, he's going to, you know, I think he's going to have some more opportunities.
No, I fully agree with what you said. Like, I think it's, now is Sam, it's like all of a sudden, oh my God, like, obviously, Adam Gase to Joe Brady, it's an upgrade, but if Joe Brady can't fix Sam, then we knew all along that, look, it may not have been Gase's fault that Sam was such a bad quarterback. Maybe it was Sam's a bad quarterback all along, and it wasn't entirely Gase's fault. Like, Big Rat makes a really good point of how, yeah, at Ryan Tannehill at his worst to Miami was not Sam Darnold level bad.
Never, ever that bad. Like, Sam last year was the worst quarterback in football. Unequivocally. Like, never that bad. Never.
Yeah. We'll see what happens with both teams now, but, like, we all know that the Jets more than likely are going to go Zach Wilson, but I feel like Jet fans have to know, saying, like, hey, at first, I don't think it's going to be all, like, sunshines and rainbows and you're going to start winning right away. They got to probably understand, look, there may be a year or two where you're not exactly a good team. Exactly. There's gonna be even though people say, like, Zach Wilson's NFL ready out of all these quarterback prospects, like, there's still a huge learning curve between college and the NFL.
Yeah, usually at least a year. Go ahead.
And Zach Wilson also, you know, didn't play against Power 5 level competition. Also, furthermore, people compare him to Mahomes. Well, Mahomes wasn't ready to play as a rookie. He sat literally the entire season. Now, you know, like, I understand, like, they're different players. Like, they're different ultimately at the end of the day. We'll see, like, with Wilson. But I'm just saying, it will take time. And I think Jets fans understand that. Like, Danny, if you talk to Danny about it, like, Danny's pretty open about, yeah, we'll probably have a top 10 pick next year. Okay.
They're in like that Cincinnati last year situation, in my opinion, where it's like, you know what, this year, they're probably gonna have a, like you said, another top 10 pick with their pick, and also too, we don't know what the Seattle pick's gonna be. So, if I'm a Jets fan, I'm already looking forward to 2022 or 2023.
Yeah, that seems about right to me. Like, but I don't think, I mean, the New York hype train, I guess, could get it out of control. But I think they know that. From what I gather from the Jets fans, I know they understand. They understand that they're still going to have another losing season, most likely,
yeah.
Unless he's like something special happens.
Yeah. The one thing I wanted to go on to, moving subjects now, is obviously I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on this new news that, hey, there's going to be another game of NFL football next year. 17 weeks. 17 games of NFL football. 18 weeks, excuse me. Where, like, I don't know how you don't love it.
Yeah, I mean, I like it coinciding with the extra playoff team because I think it justifies that seventh seed in each conference a little bit more. Because I think that it was kind of a mixed bag last year, right? I mean, on the AFC side, you saw a very competitive playoff picture with, you know, good teams with winning records missing out in the eighth, ninth slot. And then on the NFC side, you see the Bears backdooring into the playoffs and not looking remotely like a playoff team against the Saints. So I think that adding a 17th game really helps to justify that a little bit more. I was kind of a fan of the 16 format. I think that was just the right number, and I wish baseball would have done the same thing. And, of course, it's another – I mean, hey, it's the most fun sport to watch out there, and we get another week of it. So who can complain, right?
Exactly. Like, and for all the people that are saying, like, oh, it takes away from, like the regular season records and stuff like that. Like, I get that. But at the same time, too, the more the fan in me couldn't be happier about this. It's like, hey, you're getting an extra week of football. But eventually, I think this is leading. We're going to have 18 eventually, I think.
Yeah, because I'm going to go with an even number. And you know what? For the people saying it's going to, like, you know, it doesn't damage the integrity of the records, I'm sure people said that when they went from 14 games to 16 games. You're always going to have those people that are like, back in my day. And, I mean, just, it's another game. It's more football. If you like the sport, how could you be upset?
Exactly. It's like, oh, hey, y'all know, we need to do it, this, it has to be by the book. Well, no, the league's making more money, it's like the same old people, too, who are going to bitch about, like, oh, we have to watch Thursday Night Football on Amazon. It's like, look, no, the league's just moving ahead with the times that we're currently in. They know, they have the fans hooked, and they know that, hey, you add an extra week, it's not like people are going to say, oh, I'm not watching this. No, people are going to watch, and it's probably going to make the games more exciting.
I agree with Jared. It's like, record-wise, yeah, it's not a big deal. Like, it's happened before in NFL history. It has been, it should be noted, it's been like 50 years since we last changed the number of games. So,
yeah.
It is a little different in that sense. But I think the way we adjust is, can we please make records on a per-game basis? Because, yes, like, if Trevor Lawrence, like, throws, like, 38 touchdowns this year, he's going to break the rookie passing record again. Baker just broke, and it's like, well, it'll mean a lot less because he had an extra game to do it. Especially if we do with 18 games. So can we just change to per game? That's all I ask. Passing yards per game, rushing yards per game. Forget the 2,000 yard benchmark and all that other stuff. That's how we.
Too, like, even what was I gonna say here, even too, for fantasy football, like, does this give us an extra week of fantasy, because I'd sure think so, that instead of 16 weeks as fantasy, now we get 17.
Yeah, and there's also gonna be the leagues that already played with 17. Like, I know everyone hates it. I am in one league, just one, that does have a week 17 change of game, and so now that league is gonna be 18 weeks with a week 18 game. And that's going to be cool.
Like, that's a thing, too.
Also,
Sorry, go on, Jared.
I was just going to say, I'm really happy that it's another week at the end, and it's not starting earlier, because I think it would have been such a waste to do that 17th game, starting the season earlier on Labor Day weekend, a holiday weekend. Instead, it extends deeper into the winter when there's not as much going on anyway, and now it's like the Super Bowl can be in the middle of February to shorten up the gap before the draft.
Excellent point. I love that. Like, because the NFL, too, like, they're not stupid. They're not going to be like, oh, hey, yeah, we're going to start a Labor Day weekend. Because if you do that, you're not going to get a captivated audience. Because guess what? Everyone's out. They're at a cottage. They're on a lake. They're having a good time. And, like, they don't want to sit down and watch football. Meanwhile, you start it that next week. You know what? No one's up to anything. So, hey, let's watch football. And you're right, too. It also makes the offseason one less week shorter.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, that's the best way to look at it.
I'll just say free agency is going to, like, creep up on us. It's like, the Super Bowl's going to end. We're going to, like, this year, like, most years don't like this. Like, once the Super Bowl's over, it's like, okay, I want to, like, take a break a little bit for, like, 2 weeks. It's like, you're going to wake up one morning and be like, oh, shit, like, in 5 days, my player's got to make a decision on this wide receiver on the market. It's going to be no offseason. It's great.
It's going to be, like, 2 weeks, and then the combine happens.
And it's exciting for baseball. You should watch it. It's a fun sport. They hit balls with sticks and stuff.
Believe it or not, I've seen two Marlins games this year. So
wow, two out of three.
I saw, and both times they lost. Nonetheless.
And I've seen the Toronto Blue Jays win 2 of 3 this past weekend and beat the Texas Rangers today, so I'm feeling good. No, they do. Even though you guys are
just exhibitions.
No, you guys, but you guys are beating up on Baltimore right now, so it's all good. But what was the one thing I was going to say though about? Oh, and here's the other thing too. I love how a few years ago the league wouldn't acknowledge gambling. Now it's a precedent in the sport, and it's only going to get bigger. With, I don't know if you guys saw this, but Mercedes-Benz no longer has the name to the Superdome, and it's now Caesars Entertainment. So for those
really?
Of that. Yeah, so as of this July, it's now the Caesars Superdome, and gambling is the force that's just coming into this league, and it's going to make the league stupid amount of money.
Oh, yeah, it's for all sports. I mean, DraftKings has absolutely exploded ever since they went public. I mean, now they even have deals with the WWE, which is predetermined, and I mean, you saw nothing but DraftKings all over the place throughout the NFL season, so... it was just 2020 was just a massive year for gaming overall, so it's no surprise that it's taken over the sports world.
Yeah, but I was just meaning like more with football in this 18th week on top of the, it's great for fantasy, but it's also great too for gambling because the league knows, hey, we're just going to be making more money because a few years ago, the gambling was like this boogeyman behind the door the NFL did not want to open. Now they open the door and just welcome it with pride and glee. Yeah, like I think Jersey made $1 billion in January alone off of sports gambling.
Yeah, Jersey is the state that has the Super Bowl tickets. They want that kind of where it's like, okay, once Jersey proves, once the Supreme Court ruled that Jersey could have their gambling program, it's like every state just is like, oh shit, this, it pays for itself. Let's go. Let's get to it.
Exactly. It's only smart that you let legalized gambling come in and play such a huge role into the league. Like, how I think soon with stuff like Caesars having naming rights to a stadium, you're going to see gambling kiosks eventually, I think, in the stadium, and you're going to have people going and betting.
Yeah, it's we don't even know the depths of how creative it can get. It's like, because it's not just that they're going to, like, allow it and support it, but it's like they're going to put their money behind it. They're going to find creative ways to create that interaction with fans. It's like there's so many ways. So that's all.
Exactly. It's just the only thing is, though, they have to really drive home the play responsibly thing that you see a lot of the things in the whole advertise. Like, hey, if you have a gambling addiction, please call this number because if that's obviously a problem. That's obviously a darker thing. I just want to bring that into the context. But like you said, more states are legalizing it. And look, but eventually it's going to be nationwide where gambling's legal.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you talk about the responsible aspect of it. You know, when you have things like DraftKings out there that are pretty much like just an extension of fantasy football that people are used to playing anyway. A lot of people are used to doing money leagues anyway. And when you have games like that that are a really like low entry price, that's accessible because it used to be people thought, oh, betting on sports, you must be, you know, like betting your whole paycheck or something like that. And it's like, no, it's like the same as, you know, buying a beer or something like that. You want to, like, you know, enter a lineup and go high, low risk, high reward. So I think that that's going to help the accessibility to the more, like, you know, casual fan who may have an interest of, like, hey, this might be fun 1 week, and they'll, you know, people might get hooked for better or worse. But it's definitely, there's a lot of reach.
Exactly. But then again, the one thing that I notice that stuff like gambling does, and like the, for example, the alcohol industry, and it's unfortunate, but if you like target that small audience that is unfortunately addicted to it, you make more money. I know that sounds really bad coming out of my mouth, but that's the unfortunate reality behind it.
Well, and like, but also like alcohol, it's like, it is true, and it's very sad, no doubt, and like, I'm sure, much like the alcohol industry, has led to the rise up of, like, campaigns warning about addiction and programs and brochures and education and all that. Like, that will soon follow for gambling addictions, too. But I think it's also important to know that there's certainly a segment of the alcohol population where the damage can be real severe. It can ruin your life. Like, everyone listening should be careful with that, and gambling as well. But there's also the segment of the population that uses alcohol responsibly. And they're able to derive great value for that, and it makes a lot of money for a lot of people. And that's the kind of thing with gambling. It's like, at its worst, it could ruin someone's life, and there should be a lot of education to help people, no doubt. But there's also going to be a lot of people that will use it responsibly. And there's going to be a lot of people that will use it in a way where it just makes life more fun and make more money out of it. And we shouldn't forget about the positive impact it can have in addition to the
Exactly. But going back to the 17th game thing, I just got to say quickly, because I actually just realized Big Rats and Dolphins played Jared's Giants this year. I just like the fact, though, that they're not doing it where it's like, oh, hey, half of the AFC is playing home and half of the NFC is playing home. I like how it's going to go one conference 1 year, one conference the next year.
Yeah, so that it doesn't affect the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
It wouldn't be fair if the Dolphins got 9 home games and the Bills got 8. That would not, that wouldn't be, like, because it gives the Dolphins a higher probability chance. So I like it this way. And I will say right now on the podcast, the Dolphins will beat the Giants because Brian Flores destroys bad quarterbacks and Daniel Jones is a bad quarterback.
We're going to talk about bad quarterbacks from Tua Tagovailoa, boy.
Yes, Tua Tagovailoa is better than him. And also, even if he is a bad quarterback, he's got a head coach and a better defensive coordinator, and his team just plays
better. Better head coach. It's only been 1 year with Joe Judge, and he won more games in his first year than Brian Flores won in his first year, and he didn't have his best player for the whole season.
Yeah, Brian Flores had the entire roster. Brian, wait, what do you mean? The Dolphins traded their best player in the training camp, of course.
Oh, well, you know what? That's just the...
Be careful what you wish for, Big Rat. That's all I'm going to say.
You just love to hear it in April. That's all I got to
say.
You love...
I feel like this free agency period was so bonkers that everybody forgets that almost every year, free agency pales in comparison to the draft in terms of, like, the following season's implications.
Oh, 100%, because, like, with the draft, like, a lot of the times, and we'll get into that in a bit, you really, like, you're excited for your player, but at the same time, too, you're wondering, like, oh, is he going to work out? How is this game going to transition? And then you get to the later rounds where it's like, you don't know much about these guys, but this year's draft class is one I'm very excited for.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think that, like, mainly because, you know, beyond the quarterbacks that are... I think 1 through 3 are like almost set in stone. I don't know, not necessarily the quarterback for San Francisco. I mean, there's some people in the Mac Jones camp, some people in the Justin Fields camp. But, you know, beyond that, you've really got some offensive line. You know, there are a couple guys that would be the de facto bets, but again, nobody that really stands out as the bona fide number one. You could say that about guys in the secondary as well. Even, you know, the receivers, some people are putting them in, you know, different orders. So I think that there's a lot of wild cards out there.
Exactly, and because like that's why I wanted to bring up the San Francisco thing earlier, because obviously Chris Greer made the drastic trade to move up, move down, then he moved back up. But Jared, I wanted to get to you first. At 11, where do you think and where should the Giants go?
The thing I love the most about the Kenny Golladay signing that I didn't mention before is the flexibility it gives them with this draft pick. Because before free agency, it was looking like this had to be the spot for a receiver. Like, they owe it to Daniel Jones. They have to get a playmaker no matter what. Now, there's just so many possibilities here. I think that, Kyle Pitts has impressed so much that I don't see him falling out of the top 10 at this point, so I no longer consider that a viable option. I think that if they stay in the 11th slot, Rashawn Slater is an option if he is switchable to guard, which I've heard mixed things. Some people say he's a true tackle. Some people say he can play all over the line. So if he's an option at guard, then I think it should totally be considered, because I think that's the most pressing need for the team right now. If it's not him, I would go Micah Parsons, get some edge help. And if not him, they'd probably be a trade-down contender. But that's the case, and honestly, the most viable part would probably be your Patriots. And at that point, it would just hinge on whether or not the Patriots believe they can get their quarterback that they want at 11, and they might be a little too low for that. So they're kind of in that, you know, interesting position in the middle. I actually like them staying at 11 a lot, just because the amount of moves they made in free agency, and more importantly, the development of the team in 2020 allows them to not reach for any one particular guy and not be married to a particular name and just kind of go BPA to add some depth.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. Personally, with the Giants, I think it should be Slater at 11. Like, you can't, or like, even two Parsons isn't bad. It's just, look, the Giants have to shore up that offensive line, because you have all these, like, great pieces to your team, but without a sure offensive line, like, you're not going to win many football games. That's just my only con to that. But you know what? There is still some good guys at offensive linemen who will be available day two and even day three.
Yeah, exactly. So if they're looking at the board, they think that they can get a guard in the second round and they prefer to wait. I mean, I'm not entirely against that, but I think no matter when they choose to address it, the interior part of the offensive line has to be the number one priority, because, yes, do they lack, you know, is there room for improvement in the edge rushers? Absolutely. But I didn't look at this team last year and think, oh my gosh, if only they had more edge rushers, they would have won more games. No, I looked at the games, I said, if only they could score more points, they would win. You know, the defense, yeah, like that would probably be the area of improvement, but they were by no means, I think, you know, feeling the lack of an edge rusher, because they're so deep in the secondary, there's still ways for them to be an efficient top half, possibly top 10 unit with what they have now. So, yeah, I think that Slater, if I had to, you know, look at one guy, zero in, that's probably what I want the most.
Exactly, like you said, like, look, Slater should be the guy. I believe he was an opt-out in 2020, but you know what? If he's there, it's just hard to pass on. Like, even how you in 2010, like, or last year, excuse me, everyone was saying, oh, you guys could have gone with Becton or Wills. Like, I think Andrew Thomas turned out fine. It's just we learned that guys like Shane Lemieux, I don't think are starter quality in the NFL.
No, definitely not. They invested a lot of capital, a lot of draft capital, the offensive line. They've got Matt Parrott coming up, and I actually like Nate Solder staying on as a depth option, just because it would have cost the same amount of money. money to cut him as it did to keep him. And, it, you know, there is the upside if he does work out. And it adds a little bit of veteran depth there because they're gonna try out Parrott, and he might be in a platoon situation. They love to mess with the combinations, so not against that. But like you said, Lemieux, not at this point, definitely not a guy that I would be confident starting all 16.
17.
That's right.
Wait, I just wanted to see. And then one other point I wanted to get to quickly is something that you and I talked about this morning on Twitter was the NFL probably eliminating the Monday Night Football doubleheader and instead doing, I believe, a late season doubleheader involving two teams where there's going to be playoff implications. And I'm just like, okay, yeah, sold. Like, it's a great deal. Obviously, it sucks for the West Coasters, but for the rest of the country, I don't think they're sobbing too much.
Yeah, no, I think that if you're going to cater to that West Coast audience, it makes a lot more sense to do it at the end of the season with West Coast playoff contenders than it does to just give us that stupid Raiders Broncos game week one that nobody gives a crap about. Any Raiders or Broncos fans who might be listening.
But no, we know what you mean, like how it's years past they did, like it was, I believe it was like Rams 49ers, this year's was Titans Broncos. It was Raiders Broncos though in 2019, but like to your point, yeah, it's just a meaningless primetime game just to get another team on to primetime football. Which, with primetime football, I get they're trying to do this whole, you know, everyone needs to be on primetime, but at the same time, too, it's like, look, there are certain reasons why certain teams should and should not be on primetime football.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, with it being, obviously, it's tough with the game starting so late, but if it's later in the season, if it's week 15, 16, what have you, and it's two playoff contenders, there's a much higher likelihood that you're going to get that East Coast audience, you know, at the height of their football craze, right before the playoffs, their appetite for the sport, they might be more inclined to watch that game than they would week one where they'd be like, ah, who gives a crap?
Exactly. You nailed it on the head. Like, say, for example, if they're putting the Chargers and the Chiefs or, like, the Rams and the Cardinals, for example, in that window, like, people are gonna watch.
Yeah.
Hey, Big Guy, are you still with us?
I have been. I've just been waiting. You were talking to Jared about what the Giants should do at 11. I let him speak, and then I was just waiting for my turn to talk about the Dolphins and their draft.
All right. So, can you give me, before we go into what you guys are going to do at 6, or what you want them to do at 6, what did you think about the whole trading up and then trading back in kind of thing?
Yeah, and also, so when you guys transitioned from the Giants to the West Coast thing, I was like, oh shit, did Griff think that I dropped out or something?
No, I did not. It's just I didn't hear you speak, so I was just like, where is this guy? But if you want to give your quick thoughts on the week set, on the Monday Night Doubleheader as well, you're more than welcome to.
I mean, Jared pretty much covered it. I was just giving Jared his oxygen during the Giants because it's his team, and I let him, you know, handle the Giants thing, and that's why.
Completely understood.
I will say, yeah, Jared, no, absolutely no chance Pitts falls to 11. Like,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, before pro day, maybe, but
yes. So, okay, the trades. I guess we haven't talked. I guess I haven't been on since it happened. I thought it was great. I liked the initial trade more before they did the Eagles thing. I was so pumped to go to 12 and to get two first round picks next year and two first round picks the year after that. As a general statement, when you guys are talking about the draft, I will say as a Dolphins fan, like, the draft has been so much fun the last 2 years because the Dolphins have all these picks, and it's going to be fun next year and the year after as well. Just like the Dolphins always having multiple first round picks, multiple second round picks. It's been fun. It's like the draft is so much more interesting because me and like the other Dolphins fans and the Dolphins blogs, it's like we have to pay a little bit closer to attention. It's not just who you're going to take at 13 overall or whatever, and then you're done, right? And most fan bases have, like, you know, the same five or six names that they debate about for a month. We got to debate about our names at 6, our names at 18, and the Dolphins have the fourth overall pick in the second round, too, which is functionally a first-round pick. So we talk a lot about who they would get there as well, and they have a second rounder on top of that. So the Dolphins always having picks has made the draft season just a lot of fun as a fan. And if anyone listening, if you're a Lions fan,
or a Jets fan, like, you're in for a treat. Like, you know, it's hard to really appreciate it now, or an Eagles fan too. Like, but you'll see next year, the year after, just like having all these picks and all possibilities, and the fact that one affects the other. And it's like, if you take a quarterback, then that affects what you do for second pick, and vice versa. It's a lot of fun. So I think fan bases will really, really appreciate whatever happens to you.
We're only 3.5 weeks away, gentlemen.
I'm a Giants fan, and I have a lot of fun watching the Eagles maneuver their draft picks. I get the popcorn, two buckets. I just sit back and watch them pass up quality guys for bucks year in and year out.
It's also added a fun dimension to the season. Like, it was so much fun last year against Houston. Like, me and my brother, the Texans played the Bengals late in the year. The Texans pick wasn't going to be this high. The Bengals were always supposed to have picked in the Texans once Joe Burrow got hurt. Expectation was the Bengals would have the third overall pick. And the Bengals played the Texans late in the year, and the Bengals beat them. And it was, like, so much fun. It felt like watching the Dolphins, like, rooting for the Bengals to beat Houston so the Houston pick would get even better. And now, us Dolphin fans have that same excitement for the 49ers. So I thought it was a great trade. I'm not super high on moving up to 6. I think I'm a first pick. They did it. Want one of the elite pass-catching talents. You don't want the second-tier guys. Because, honestly, there's, in my opinion, there's not a whole lot of value in second-tier receivers in this draft, because the draft is so deep that second-tier receivers, the third-tier receivers, the fourth-tier receivers are all. However, there's a handful of guys in the top 10 that have potential to be true unicorns. Jamar Chase, they're not like everyone else in the draft. Like, they're just not. So the drop-off from them to the next level is pretty significant. So I get why they wanted to move up to put themselves in a chance to get one of those two guys, with the expectation being either the Falcons or they trade someone wants a quarterback. That's what we're expecting. It is possible they go Pitts. They've loved Pitts. They've done a lot of research on Pitts. If they do, that would really suck. I know it's possible, but the expectation is, as Schefter said, four quarterbacks in the top 6. So, I think the Dolphins either take the march into Kyle Pitts, or I think they trade that pick again to a team that wants a quarterback, and the quarterback falls to 6, except New England, because obviously Griffin will not trade.
No, I completely get that. Like, it was like with the Carolina Panthers, how there was all those rumors that, hey, if they wanted to trade up, they could go to 4 and grab someone, but then it's really tough because Atlanta's not going to trade with them for that pick. I still think personally that if there is a trade up, it's Denver or New England, and I think it's either that Atlanta pick at 4 or it's Detroit at 7, potentially.
Yes. Like, New England can trade with Detroit or Atlanta, no problem. They can't trade with Miami, they can't trade with the Jets. And similarly, like you said, the Panthers, I do think that's a big reason why they did this trade with Darnold. Like, if the fourth overall pick wasn't the Falcons, and if it was instead Detroit, they might have done a trade with Detroit and moved up. And the rumor is that when they traded with the Niners, they were considering trades for multiple teams. That's what the report is saying. The Niners were not the only offer. So, in theory, you could speculate Carolina was trying to trade with the Dolphins, but the Niners aren't. The Niners really surprised me.
No, exactly.
It's definitely a good move. You're moving down from 3 to 6. You're probably going to draft the same player you would have drafted at 3 anyways, and you got another first-round pick in the process. So on net, it was a win. I just think it could have been an even better win, because even though I understand them wanting to get one of the two elite guys, it's not guaranteed. So you better get them, because if you don't get one of them, then it's going to look real bad unless you trade back. And as a result, I think having multiple picks next year and the year after would have been super valuable. Overall, it's still a win. I can't complain. So I'm a fan of the trade experience. It's like I tell Danny, it's not about drafting the best players. It's about giving yourself the opportunities as possible to draft good players. That's what the Patriots do. That's what the Seahawks do. You trade down and you just raise your odds of getting more good players. I agree with them.
No, for sure. Because, like, look, Miami's just looking at this. They looked at an opportunity where someone was aggressively offering them an offer they couldn't refuse. And then, so with San Francisco now, though, like, a lot of it depends on, hey, the success of how I still think, in a realistic world, what I think could happen if no one else trades is, I think it's Mac Jones at 3, Pitts at 4, Ja'Marr Chase at 5, and then I think Jalen Waddle could be the guy potentially for the Dolphins' big rap.
Yeah, I would. I would be going with Waddle. Strong, hard to kill. Grant Henry Ruggs. That has a pick, so I'd say that with a grain of salt. Smith, not at 6. I'm okay with it at 18. If you were to fall that far, which I don't think you would. Still would like it. And yeah, I think Pitts, Chase, Waddle is probably the most likely run out here. Although I will say, and I really do believe this, like, Pitts keeps here and someone offers the Dolphins another first round pick to go to 6, I think they'll seriously consider. But if you had to guess their preference, I think it's 1, Chase, 2, 3, down, and then 4 would be Joe.
I think that I just think it would be a massive mistake by any of these top 5 teams if either Ja'Marr Chase or Kyle Pitts goes in the top 5, just because the Bengals, I know Burrow wants Chase, but they need the offensive line help way more. They're fine at receiver. They got Boyd. They got Higgins. Higgins had a great rookie year. And I know Chase is the best receiver available, but you can't get all happy with these records. You saw the Super Bowl. Best offense in the league. No offensive line. Falls apart completely. So the Bengals have to go Sewell at 5. I think any other pick is going to be a massive mistake. And I also think the Falcons, you know, it's not that they could obviously benefit from having Pitts, for sure, right? But they've got so much leverage with this pick. I mean, they're in such a dream scenario, in my opinion, where unless the Patriots, because the Patriots would be the only contender to trade back up into the top 10 right now, I think. Because I think the Lions moving up would also be a massive mistake, and I don't foresee that happening. I think they'll just stay pat at 7. So I think, like, you know, if the Patriots want to trade back into the top 10, and there is, one of these 5 quarterbacks that they don't want, the Falcons have so much leverage to either trade the pick down and ask for more than the Panthers would ask to trade their pick down, or you wind up taking the quarterback yourself and either A, keep him, give him a clipboard year, or B, trade him after the fact, because there's so many teams that are going to want him, whether it's Fields or Jones, or Lance, whoever it may be. I think it's going to be attractive and valuable to other teams if Atlanta doesn't want him themselves. So I think that they're doing themselves a massive disservice. Like, yes, you know, is Matt Ryan still a quality quarterback? Do they still have the talent to win games and possibly make it into the playoffs? Yes, but there's a lot of competition in the NFC. Their defense isn't particularly good. What is this team ceiling, right? You know, maybe getting in, maybe winning a game in the wild card round, maybe delaying Matt Ryan's retirement for a little bit. You could do that, or you can get more capital by, you know, flipping this quarterback pick, or just take your quarterback in the future. So I just don't see why any of these teams should be taking Chase or Pitts. I know it's attractive to try to take this stud receiver, but when your team's got other needs to fill, it's just not worth it.
I will say this on the Sewell thing, which I agree with literally everything you just said. I love Pitts. I think Pitts is phenomenal. He's got Calvin Johnson level potential. Seriously, I mean, he's literally the same size as Calvin Johnson in terms of size, in terms of wingspan, etc. The problem is Sewell, and I still think they should take him for Cincinnati. But here's the conundrum. They drafted Jonah Williams in the first round 2 years ago. And then Jonah Williams missed his whole rookie year, and then he played last year. And so they've already used the first round pick on a left tackle. And what Jonah Williams is pretty adamant. Maybe he doesn't care now. At the time, a few years ago, he was like pretty adamant about playing left tackle and not moving inside. At least at the time. Maybe he doesn't care anymore now. The Bengals then, for right tackle, they recruited Riley Reiff in free agency, and they apparently recruited him hard. They got him like a steak dinner and everything.
With Joe Burrow.
With Joe Burrow and a steak dinner. It was a very aggressive recruiting pitch. Well, I think the one issue is
The one issue is, like, even though that's true, I think it's fair to say that, you know, I'm sure most people, if they're listening, they're going to be like, okay, but come on, like, this is Sewell, like what? Well, why would you prioritize Riley Reiff over Sewell? It's not that. It's just that they want to be men of their word. They promised him the job. They recruited him aggressively. Like, they made a big deal out of it. And then so it becomes, okay, well, you can draft Sewell and move him to left guard, which you could do, but that's kind of a weird way to use the fifth overall pick. You don't usually see guards go that high. And then Quentin Nelson went seventh overall, so I guess it's not unprecedented. But it also, you know, he's supposed to be a franchise left tackle. Like, that's his appeal. And then you could also, the other option is you play him at left tackle and you do move Jonah Williams inside the left guard against his wishes, which maybe you could do. You know, I don't know their locker room dynamic. I definitely agree that they need to prioritize the offensive line. I definitely 100% agree they should prioritize that over Chase. I also think the receivers are underrated, as Jared said, with Higgins and with Boyd and with Tate and all those people. But I also just think that it's not that simple. That's all I'm saying. It's not that simple. It's not that they should or shouldn't do it. It's just that there is kind of a complicated dynamic in their O-line.
No, for sure. It's just, I think with a lot of Bengal fans, they want that, like, attractive, like, Jamar Chase level player. But we all know, though, that if Jamar Chase falls past 5, Chris Greer is running to the phone and phoning in that pick within the first 30 seconds.
Did it. Chris, that pick will go in faster than you could imagine.
Well, I think that Chase is going to the Lions, honestly. I think that, you know, between Lions and Dolphins, and that's where Chase and Pitts fall. I don't buy this idea that the Lions, here's the thing. Before they got Jared Goff, I totally would have understand trade Stafford for, like, a pick bundle, blowing the whole thing up and starting a rebuild. This team, they spent a lot of money in free agency, and you got to justify this Jared Goff contract. You just lost Kenny Galladay. I think he kind of, you know, in order to justify all that money, you kind of have to go and replace KG at that point. So with that taken at 7, I think, you know, it's Pitts and Chase. You know, whichever Miami takes, whichever Detroit takes, unless Miami trades down. Either way, I think that's 6 and 7 right there.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. We could see one of them go earlier, but I do agree, like, after, like, that's their, I think Jared's describing their floor. It's like, at 6 and 7, if they're both there, I think they're both gone. So, like, they're not going to fall. Like we were saying, the Giants have no chance.
Don't rub it in, okay? You know what I mean? I'm kind of warming up to Evan Engram a little bit because they have Kyle Rudolph, and he can, you know, work out of a slot rotation. But, oh my gosh, I would love to replace Engram with Pitts. No idea.
You were bragging about how many games Joe Judge won as a rookie head coach. Maybe it would have been better if he went 4-12.
No comment.
No, because Rashawn Slater is the missing piece. He's the last piece to the puzzle of the Giants' return to Super Bowl glory.
I think, and look, Jared can rightfully mock the Eagles for, like, being dumb and all that, but I will say, like, very plainly, what would you rather have right now? Going 4-12 like the Eagles did and getting the 6th overall pick and then either using that on Chase or Pitts or trading it for a first-round pick like they got? Or would you rather be the Giants at 11, who also, at least the Washington football team made the playoffs. The Giants didn't get that. It's kind of 6-10 life. The Dolphins have been there for a long time. It's no fun.
Listen, I understand when people are like, okay, it's a team with a losing record, and then the draft rolls around, and it's like, oh, look, you didn't make the playoffs, and you could have lost more games and gotten a better draft pick. But I think at some point, you know, winning culture, I think, is the most important thing in the NFL. Having the right coach and having the right locker room mentality is so much more meaningful than even the most talented players you could possibly imagine. Because, like, Calvin Johnson, you know, the guy retired early. One of the best players that, you know, any of us will ever see play the game of our generation watching football. And he said, like, it didn't matter the talent in the building because they did not have the culture. They didn't have the mindset. They didn't have a winning attitude. And, you know, for the Giants, yeah, they went 6-10. And they didn't have Saquon all season. Daniel Jones misses a couple of games toward the end of the year. And you look at, like, oh, what were those wins for? They were worth nothing. You missed the playoffs. But it's like alive until the very last second. And what does it lead to? It leads to an offseason where all of a sudden, players want to come to the Giants for the first time in years. They were accused by a lot of members of sports media after they fired Pat Shurmur, who sucked as a head coach. They said they were asking, you know, Gettleman and Mara, they were like, how does this look? Are you worried about the Giants becoming a franchise that nobody wants to go to because they think it's toxic? And, you know, I mean, that's how you turn into the Jets and the Browns, where you got all these high picks year in and year out. All right, the Browns, obviously, before the last couple of years, you know, you got all these high picks year in and year out, and it doesn't matter because you don't know what to do with those players, no matter how talented they are. So, much better for the team going forward, in my opinion, to come that close to, you know, making the playoffs, to where they have that thirst for success. They have the motivation and the desire to win. Now you've got guys like Logan Ryan recruiting people. You have guys like James Bradbury and Blake Martinez taking pay cuts so that they could accommodate the needs in free agency, when those guys should have been the last people on that team to be asked to take less money after what they did in 2020. But it just shows their commitment to the team overall. And to me, like, watching that kind of culture manifest, that means so much more to me than picking a few slots higher and getting Kyle Pitts, as great as he might be.
Well, I will say that was beautiful. That was a nice, eloquent speech. I thought I agree with most of it. It was beautiful. I hope you enjoy that same mentality when, you know, Ja'Marr Chase is destroying your cornerbacks and Kyle Pitts is leaving your linebackers in the dust.
Oh, some lovely banter. Can I give my quick thoughts about my team quickly before we wrap up?
Yeah.
Personally, I think the Patriots can go one of two ways. It's just, unlike last year, I totally am not against the Cam signing because you need a quarterback going into the draft unless you're in the top five, in my opinion.
Yep.
If you're outside of that, you can maybe afford it because you know what? You know you're going to get someone. Like you guys last year, Big Red, like the Chargers, like the Bengals, and like this year with the Jags, the Jets, and now the 49ers. But I think there's a strong possibility they trade up to get like a Justin Fields or Trey Lance and have them sit for a year or two behind Cam. Or, you know, get someone later on, maybe like a Kellen Mond, or even I just saw a report they met with Mississippi State's KJ Costello. And they could pop, but I wouldn't even be shocked if they went like with a cornerback route in the first round. So I still think that my team's a mixed bag. And if I have my mock draft 2 coming out soon, which, spoiler alert, I have the Patriots trading with the Dallas Cowboys for the 10th overall pick to get Justin Fields.
Good. Bounce another NFC East team out of the top 10. Love to see it.
I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think you hit all the right points. And I think, yeah, because in theory, they can trade up again, but it's just like they never want to be this close. It's not like, oh, next year when they're 5-11, they can trade up. It's like, well, no, that world doesn't exist. So it's like, you know, 15th overall, this is about as close as you're going to get, because if you're picking in the late 20s or 30s, it's going to be even more expensive to move up because the team that you're trading with is going to want more for falling so far back in the draft. It's going to, like the Niners did, you're going to have to give up multiple first-round picks and a third-round pick, stuff like that. So I'm with you. I think this is the time. I think there's a lot of good quarterbacks. Cam gives them an excuse to wait. And I think it's a good plan. I think it's exactly as it should be. Cam will take over. The rookie will sit. When it's time, it's time. And you do it organically like this. And look, you'd rather have Cam than some random veteran quarterback who will give you average play, but now that quarterback doesn't know the offense. That quarterback has no continuity either. Like, the whole advantage with Cam is that it's continuity. It's the second year. He'll be better in his second year than his first year. Is Andy Dalton, like, so much better than Cam that having him without the continuity and a higher salary, does that make any economic sense? No, it does not.
Let's not forget that Cam's salary is 35%, is base if it's 35%, and 65% is performance incentives.
Yep, exactly. And so it works out perfectly. Like, I don't, like, look, I understand Patriots fans, like, really want Jimmy G, and I get it. Although, and I'm sure you would agree with me on this, you're not getting Jimmy G and trading up for a quarterback. You're not doing both.
Oh, good Lord, no. I also do not want Jimmy G at a $25 million price cap, because then I saw it, like, the I follow an account called Pat's Cap. It's just a guy, his name's Miguel, who does all the number crunching for fun. I don't know if it's his job or not, but he basically said the Patriots have to give up, like, Dante Hightower, who I happened to be in a Twitter interaction with the other day, no big deal, and someone else where I don't want that. So I would only accept Jimmy if it's at, like, a $10 million salary, if we can get it down to that low, or even less.
Yeah. And that's why, like, it... Like, I think Jimmy G could be an upgrade. It's just, Jimmy G has, it's the same thing with the Darnold thing with Teddy. It's not just that Jimmy G has to be better than Cam. If you're going to be trading a second round pick and paying him more money and, like, have less money to keep certain guys in the roster, it's not enough for him to be better. He has to be, like, a lot better. And that's, like, where it gets dicey when it comes to giving up a second round pick, maybe having to cut Hightower. All of a sudden, that's a really expensive bet to be making. And it's going to be really disastrous if he's just, like, the 15th best quarterback in football. So, yeah, we'll see. They could very well still get him if the price drops far enough that it takes the pay cut. But the price would have to drop to the point where it makes more financial sense, where you're not risking a high tower, you're not risking a second round pick.
Exactly.
Belichick would probably just prefer to mold one of these rookies, honestly. And like you guys mentioned, this is the year to do it. Like I said before, I really think the Patriots look like the most logical and maybe the only logical trade-up partner for these teams, which could... I mentioned before, like, the Falcons having a lot of leverage, but I refer more to, like, their leverage over the Panthers to make the trade-down deal. But from the Patriots' perspective, from a trade-up perspective, their odds of finding a partner with one of those teams and not getting completely slaughtered in the process is better this year probably than it's going to be in future years, because so many other teams in their, near their position in the draft are more secure in the quarterback.
And also, Griff, I'm sure you would agree with this too. I mean, like, as much as you guys love Jimmy, let's say you don't care about the money, you don't care about the $25 million, you don't care about giving a second-round pick. Okay, and I know you do, and I do as well, but even if you were a fan that didn't care about any of that stuff, like, you can't trust the guy to play for 16 games. That's also why. It's like, I don't care about giving up a second-round pick. He's so much better than Cam. He's going to be a massive upgrade. It's like, well, none of that matters if he misses a game by week 7, you know? So I think there's a lot of risk with Jimmy, which you can do. It's fine to trade him, but it has to be at a reduced salary. It has to be at a lower draft pick, because the injury concern is as much of a concern as, like, the actual outplaying Cam.
Exactly. Like, I'd rather have someone I know that I can rely on. Like, I love everybody when it's like, oh, we re-signed Cam, and it's all this, the Patriots could be worse than they were last year. And I'm like, no, he has a full offseason. Belichick got the guys he wants. I'm not saying this team's going to go like 14-3, which I still have to get used to saying that, but there's potential that this team, I think, can win more than 7 games in 2021.
Yeah, we didn't get to talk about it earlier, but all the records being so different is like such a mindfuck right now. Like teams that are going to go 10-7. Like, what the fuck is that? What the fuck is a 10-7 season?
The only thing I'm going to say before we wrap up is, do not tell Jeff Fisher that 8-8 cannot happen anymore.
No more 8-8 or 7-9 bullshit.
Yeah. Oh, one more thing I wanted to address quickly. So the NFL too, with the new salary cap, not salary cap, excuse me, the new TV deal and everything, every team's going to play one international game a year, and they're thinking about branching out to more countries. Like, I saw potentially Germany, I think South America, and even coming up to my neck of the woods in Canada as potential opportunities for the NFL.
Like it. More international expansion is good. The NBA is a very international sport. The NFL is not. And I think the NFL wants to grow into that. Like, the NBA has this advantage where they can get prospects literally from all over the world. From Africa, from Europe, from Southeast Asia, like everywhere.
Israel.
And so I think the NFL is trying to get to that level where, you know, you can actually get some international prospects that come in instead of just having to rely on the guys right out of all the traditional U.S. colleges. Fun footnote on this, because I was reading about this the other day, because apparently the head of NFL, the guy who's on the NFL UK office, used to be the head of NFL Europe. He resigned a few days ago. There was an article written about him on NFL.com. Alistair Kirkwood, I think is his name. And in the article, they mentioned how TCU has a quarterback who's from Germany. He's like a four-star quarterback from Germany, and he's going to be playing college football at TCU. I think stuff like that is really cool, and will make the game a lot better.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know still if international is going to happen this year, because obviously they want to see what the pandemic situation is, but I think at least for 2022, it's something to look at as a positive. Well, anyway, guys, does anybody have anything else to add before we wrap up today's show?
No, just thanks for having us on. It was a good time, and put it in pen. The Dolphins will beat the Giants. This will be better than my Cleveland Browns losing to the Jets prediction, because this will be 8 months in the making. The Dolphins, or however, or whenever the game actually takes place, the Dolphins will beat the Giants in Hard Rock Stadium because Brian Flores beats up on terrible quarterbacks. That is all.
Final score of that game, 27-14 Giants. Leonard Williams will get a sack. James Bradbury will get at least one interception. Tua sucks.
It would be so shitty if, like, by the time of the game, it's like Xavier Howard's on IR, Kenny Galladay's on IR. It's like
he's already making excuses.
Boys, I love, this is the thing I love about doing this, is that, look, it's April and we're, like, so at each other. Like, that's what I love about this sport. Truly brings out the best in everyone.
It was fun. Thanks, Chris.
No problem, guys. That's going to do it for episode 78 of YWC Football Talk. I'll see you guys in the next episode. Big thanks once again to the Trust Fund Approved Jared and Big Rad 310 for joining me. We'll see you guys in the next YWC Football Talk.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, SayTheDamnScore.com.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.